to ask you to think tonight, is the notebook a curse or is it a blessing? And I'm not going to ask you to raise your hands now to see which one it is, because I don't want to be discouraged in your opinion at this point. But there is a verse, and you're familiar with, many of you, I'm sure, in Deuteronomy chapter 30, verse 19, in which he says, I call heaven and earth to record this day against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore choose life, that both thou and thy seed may live. Now, it's not quite the same in that the notebook is set before you, but it can be and will be either a blessing or a curse, not only to your son, daughter, but also to you as a parent or to you as parents. Is it a curse or is it a blessing? You just completed that time of year. Many of you last week, a week before, were hurriedly hoping that your son or daughter would complete the notebook. Get all the things done, and maybe some pressure and frustration that was there. It was that way at our house. Some of you know we have 5 children in school, and they all had notebooks to do some degree of work in. In addition to that, I had 56 notebooks of my own stacked on the kitchen floor. And quite frankly, I say the curse of teaching at Christian Heritage is the notebook. At certain times of year, because all the hundreds of notebooks have to be graded. And the other side of the coin is there, though. It is also a blessing because of what you see happening in students' lives as you work with the notebooks. But I wonder if you've asked some questions. Is it worth all this hassle? What's going on? Why all this busy work? Why all this writing and copying and recopying? The various questions you may have about the notebook. Well, I hope tonight to be able to say a few things that will help you see why we have embraced and why we keep embracing the method of teaching with the notebook. Several years ago, we embraced the philosophy known as the American Christian Philosophy of Education. In that philosophy, the commonly called the principal approach, the chief teaching tool in that philosophy is the notebook. And we believe that the notebook is essential then to follow the philosophy we think that has made our school distinctive in Oklahoma City because of the biblical basis, the biblical principal approach to teaching boys and girls. The philosophy that we have gives us briefly an explanation of the cause and the reason of all things. As we approach teaching preschoolers through high school students, we have to have an explanation of the cause and the reason of things. And as you bring about the explanation of that, you've got to do it through a curriculum. You have to do it also through a method of teaching. So your philosophy starts here, and it directs or dictates what your curriculum will be. What are you going to teach to help explain the cause and reason of all things and all the different areas we teach in school? What subjects will be used to do that? Well, then once you determine your subjects, then you will have to determine how you're going to teach. Your curriculum says what you're going to teach, and then your methodology says how you're going to teach it. And it's in that how we're going to teach that we have come about the notebook philosophy of education, or the notebook method of education. Now, there are basically 2 types of products that will come from educational philosophy. And each different product will come from a different philosophy of education. And there's lots of ways to state this, but one way to state it would be that there are 2 products, 2 mentalities that will be produced by a philosophy of education. One mentality is the producer mentality. The other mentality is a consumer mentality. And I'll explain more fully what I mean by that. But depending on the kind of philosophy you follow, you'll come out with a certain product. Now, many, I believe, Christian schools have tried to adopt and have adopted a Christian philosophy of education, but they've gone to methodology, thinking that methodology is secular. It's not Christian nor pagan. It's just a method of teaching. But that's not right. A method will be based upon a philosophy. which was based upon your view of God and your view of man. Who man is, who God is, and how does man learn will determine your methodology. Well, with a Christian philosophy of education, if it doesn't have the right methodology, you can produce a consumer mentality in boys and girls, which I'll identify. But first, what would be a producer? I identified a producer as one who will use his mental and physical abilities in the environment of liberty to make something or to do something. That's a producer. A boy or girl that can go out and make something or do something. Now, it sounds pretty simple, but not a large percent of our young people are producers. They don't know how to do anything, and they don't know how to make anything. And I'll explain that further also as we go through. Well, this product of a producer is the product of a philosophy of education. It's a product of a biblical view of man. If you start with a biblical view of man, you'll start with the fact that man is produced in the image of God, with lots of implications from that. Secondly, man is commanded to subdue his environment. Man is commanded to do something in this world, not just be in the world, but to do something in the world. And thirdly, man is accountable to God. And so from a quick biblical view of man, he is made in the image of God. It tells a lot about his makeup that's different from animal makeup, other organisms' makeup. It says that man is to go out and subdue the environment to do something, and then he's going to give an account to God for what he does. With that mentality, you will produce a producer. If you have a methodology that will emphasize who man is, who God is, and how our accountability is to God. And I believe the notebook helps produce producers. Well, what's a consumer? A consumer is one who has to have things provided to him for him before he can do anything. You've got to lay the things out that he needs. Well, it's very evident, of course, in our nation today that we have seen our nation turn to a consumer mentality. We are a consumer nation today. We're not a producer nation. We import more goods than we produce. Well, that comes from a pagan view of man. Who is man from the pagan view? Well, first place, he's not created by God. He's a product of evolution. Basic difference. Secondly, he's designed to serve the state. His purpose in life is to serve the state. And thirdly, if there is an accountability, it's only accountability to himself, whatever his standards might be. Now, with this pagan view of man, that he is nothing more than a higher evolved being, a higher evolved animal, it says that we are basically animal. And the basic methodology in America today is a consumer mentality. It's a consumer method of teaching. And commonly you'd call it a workbook method of teaching. And you're all familiar with this. You have a textbook and you have a workbook. You read the textbook and then the workbook's got questions that you fill the blank in, or multiple choice or true false. You find the correct answer, you come over here and you write it in your notebook. You fill a blank in. Everything is laid out for you, all you need as consumer mentality, laid all out for you, and all you got to do is be able to see it here and transfer it to here. Now, that is stimulus response psychology. If you provide the proper stimulus, the student should be able to make the right selection, response. Where did that idea come from? Well, some of you know we've been in sessions before. Most of that in America came from the Pavlovian psychology out of Russia. Evolutionary psychology, atheistic psychology, in which they dealt with animals and they would stimulate animals a certain way and they would come about a pre-described response in that animal. They took that same research and simply applied it to humans, because humans are just higher evolved animals, and how animals learn is how man will learn. And so we ended up in the last several years having a stimulus response method of teaching and learning in America and other nations as well, but very predominantly in America. And it produces a consumer mentality. Well, that is where we are as a nation then. I don't know what our balance of trade is, but it's for several years been out of balance. We consume more than we produce. We buy more than we sell. We all are plagued by those of you who are in your own businesses. You know you're plagued by not being able to find people who can do things. They can't produce things. You've got to show them. You've got to tell them. You've got to lay it out before them. People, that's a product of a method of teaching, which is a product of a philosophy of education, which is a product of a philosophy of man and God. So, why the notebook? Well, we find typically that students are plagued by the four I's I like to describe. Mr. Jim Rose from the first demonstration school for this philosophy in California identified these four I's, and I found it true repeatedly in our students and oftentimes more particularly in new students. The four I's are ignorance, inertia, ineptitude, and irresponsibility. Now, they've become that way because of a method of teaching and a philosophy of teaching. So those four I's are ignorance. They don't know anything. Ask them a question, I don't know. Well, now, I don't know. They just don't know anything. They've not been expected to know anything, so they don't know anything. Secondly, inertia. Mentally, they've been sitting still. And the law of inertia says an object that's at rest tends to remain at rest and to overcome some outside force. And the minds are at rest, and they're resisting movement. Inertia plagues students today. Ineptitude. I can't do that. Oh, I can't do that. I can't do anything. You show me how to do it. Better yet, you do it for me. And I'll take it to school. They are plagued by ineptitude. And then irresponsibility. Bring it tomorrow. What does that mean? Nothing. Pick it up. What does that mean? Doesn't mean anything. I'm irresponsible. I'm not responsible to anybody or anything. Now, the notebook approach will set about to correct those four I's. And I've personally seen it correct many, many students from this plague that they suffer under. So we believe that the notebook approach is biblical in that it relates to who man really is from God's point of view. Also, we know it's a historical method of teaching and learning. Early days of our nation, we didn't have all the fancy schools, and we didn't have all the high-degree teachers and all the tools, the audiovisual techniques. We didn't have all that. We had a lot of people who learned to research and teach themselves. And they compiled information in notebooks. They consolidated their studies. They put it in one place, in one condensed form. It's there for them to use. And historically, Americans have learned through the notebook approach. Well, we believe it's very effective in three areas of teaching. It's very effective in teaching skills and facts. It teaches the four R's. Now, last month I left off with the four R's that we emphasize, which is the basic method of the principal approach. Teach students to research, teach students to reason, teach students to relate what they learn to other areas, to areas of life, and then to record. That simply means to make a record, to write down what you've done, to document what you've done, document your research. So the notebook effectively teaches the four R's. The notebook, as it is done properly, contains all that the student has done. It contains all the notes and all the handouts. As we move up, because these notebooks start in pre-grade in a simple form, as they move up into the upper grades, they do more and more in their notebooks. I brought with me tonight last year biology notebook. You'll be glad to look at it. Some of you already have. It contains several hundred pages. Everything in this notebook was produced by a 10th grade student. It is well done. It's well written. It contains all the notes that was given by the teacher. It contains all the assignments, all the homework assignments. It contains all the tests, quizzes that were given. It stands as a record of that student. And a student produced all of this. I've had many parents come in and say, well, I never did much work in a college course. Well, you can see what it does for a student then to produce something like this and to look back and say, I did that. you've helped eliminate those four I's that plague students. It doesn't come easy to start with, but it is something that can be produced. The notebook teaches accountability. There's a standard by which that notebook is to be constructed, and there's a standard by which it's going to be evaluated, accountable for his reaching that standard. It becomes a two-way picture. This particular notebook belongs to Charlotte Burleson, who is now a junior in school. She's been here since the school begun. She's in her 11th year. She started in the first grade. That notebook is a picture of her. And it's a picture of her that her teacher can look at and her parents can look at. And this is what Charlotte did. It's also a picture to the parent of the teacher, because this notebook came from a notebook that the teacher had to research and develop in order to teach the student from that same method of instruction rather than a textbook and a workbook concept of education. So it's a perfect picture then of the student to the parent, and also a picture of the parent, of the teacher back to the parent. The notebook approach is very effective in developing the ability to reason, to learn to use that special differentiating quality that man has that no other creation has. With our soul came the quality of reasoning, the ability to reason. And by using a notebook, the assignments that are given, requiring students to research and to read and to write, the recording part of it, they learn to start reasoning in their work. And the notebook so is very effective in teaching, developing the ability to reason. I think the most noticeable thing in the notebook that should be the biggest encouragement to you parents, it has been to me as a parent, comes in the area of character building. You know, you can't separate the developing of character and the learning of information, the acquiring of knowledge. If you develop I think it's Abraham Lincoln that said, if you develop a person strong in knowledge and weak in moral character, you've created a menace to society. And we've done that a great deal of time. We've trained people's intellect and neglected their moral character, and we really do produce those who can victimize their society in which they live instead of contributing to the uplifting of that society. So the character building is very strongly emphasized and used in working with a notebook. It's a matter of doing, not talking. I've seen people try to teach character by telling character stories, studying the great courage of Daniel, and that's helpful. Studying the industry of different people, the rebuilding of the wall, the stories in Nehemiah and Ezra, and on, tell them stories and sit there and just enjoy those stories, and they go out and they won't pick the toys up in the bedroom when they get through. You've got to train the character building. Character does not come easily. Character is not primarily mental. Character is primarily physical in the doing of something, and so the notebook gives them something to do. And I want to read a short passage, just two verses that you'd be familiar with in Romans, in the 5th chapter. And he says, "And not only so, but we glory in tribulations also, knowing that tribulation worketh patience, and patience experience, and experience hope." What he's talking about, the tribulations that God brings in our life, are those things that develops our character. And so with a notebook, we lay out a standard, or set out a standard, lay out a procedure for meeting the standard, and the student has to work at that assignment to complete that notebook to the teacher's expectation. Now, a lot of those expectations, if you just looked at it isolated from the philosophy and from the method, you might say, and I've heard parents say this, that is the biggest waste of time I've ever seen. Why all that time in copying neatly and rewriting? If the student can read it, isn't that good enough? Why does it have to be done so good? Well, they need to learn that they can meet a standard. They need to know that when they are expected and demanded to do something, that they can do it, inspire themselves perhaps. And when they've done it, they stand back and look at it and they say, I did it. Now, people, that's real. Students learn that way. They learn by perseverance. over, do it again, and do it again, and do it again, and do it again. If it has to be done that way to develop the character. So the patience produces endurance. We have dependability, industry, and it concludes with hope. You know what hope means, that passage? I'm sure most of you do. It means confidence. Not a wishy-washy, I hope, I hope, I hope. It's confidence. When you get through, you're confident in what you can do because God has led you to do it. And we need students who are confident. Confident comes by production, not just by hearing. And so with the notebook, they learn that they can produce something. James 1 says, count it all joy when you have different trials because it will produce patience. Again, that's the character that we're wanting to see produced. Well, the notebooks set a standard of excellence. When a student finally will mentally, internally yield to the demands of the notebook, the battle's over and the victory starts being won. When they finally say, I will do it, I don't may not like it, I don't always understand it, but I will do it, I will meet that demand that that teacher set out, when they make that internal decision to do that, they're on the way to success then in their learning process. There is the matter of demanding excellence, that when the decision is made, you've got the beginning of producing a producer. They acquire confidence. They see they can do it, and they become excited because they did do it. Parents, let me encourage you in some area. Don't sympathize with your students on labeling their notebooks. Don't make little comments like, it looks like a bunch of malarkey to me. It's a bunch of busy work. Don't have anything better to do. When I first came to Christian Heritage Academy, one of the early board meetings we had a board member. I'm thankful he's not here now. He's a very fine man, but he was totally engulfed in a pagan philosophy of education. And his view was, it doesn't matter what kids do. It doesn't matter what they turn in. If they can pass the test, that's good enough. Well, what kind of view of man is that? Is man just a mental being? Does man have a soul and a character to be developed into the image of Christ, or is he just to develop his mind and it doesn't matter anything? Well, of course, from the Christian point of view, that's not true. It does make a difference. Their character is, I say, much more important than their mental acquisitions during the year. They can stand on their character. If this character develops, the other will come along anyway. But if the knowledge develops without the character, they may really be a menace to their society. So don't sympathize with your sons and daughters. Encourage them, help them, push them. Yes, you must. Yes, you must. If you look at it and say, it looks good enough to me, well, it's not your standard that they're trying to meet. It's the teacher's standard. See, my standard may be too low as a parent. I look at it too close at hand. I sympathize because his struggle is my struggle. I've got to stay home tonight, or I've got to do this or that. So I might lower my standard. I ask you to support the standard that the teacher has. I know just the other night in our session we had here, my wife gave a brief part of the presentation on meeting the demands, responsibility to the student and to the teacher. And in that 20-minute or so discussion that she did, or presentation she made the statement, I came to the time that I said, I'll be glad when I'm finished with these notebooks. And bless her heart, she'll be that in just about 18 more years or so, probably. She's been at it for 8 years and a few more, and she'll have it made. It's tough on parents to produce it. It's tough on them. But you've got to stand in the place of your child sometimes. Our house literally looks like a notebook depository, particularly when I bring all mine home and all the kids have all theirs. So you know what it's like with the one that you have at your house. But we wouldn't trade it. We've seen some of our sons develop some qualities that were very slow in coming and very needful in coming. But we've seen them do the same thing that I talked to you about. When they finally internally yield to it and do it, things start changing in their lives. I've seen it through kids struggling through the elementary grades and the high school grades, and I've seen them go on to college, and I've seen them benefit from a method of learning we call the notebook approach. The clearest explanation I ever had was the second year we worked with a notebook approach. The first year I did it myself, I just kind of tinkered with it in class. And the next year I presented it to the teachers and we started going more into it. Had a young man in the eighth grade. And I determined that if the papers weren't done right, I'd just hand them back and do them again. And this poor boy, I think the first semester, he never did a paper any fewer than three times. He had to rewrite it at least three times. Sometimes actually went to five and six times, I'd hand it back. Not acceptable, not acceptable. That young man, his mother told me, would come at night and cry because Mr. Bullard hated him. And I don't know if the boy hated me, but I think before they finally left, the mother might have hated me, in all honesty. But I stayed with that fella. And I can document this. Somewhere during the second semester, he finally, I couldn't hear him say it, but I could see him do it. He finally yielded to the idea, he's not going to accept this unless I do it right. And almost as if, matter of fact, the next time he turned the paper in, I asked him if somebody wrote it for him. It was a different handwriting. It was a different expression. And at that point, his grades began to move right up. He started doing papers one time. And I think finally ended up the rudiments course with a B grade. It was a matter of internal struggle. And his parents didn't help him either, because they were sympathizing with him along the way. Yeah, I know how he is, you know. I've talked to him. I'm serious. Those little comments, you know, yeah, I don't blame you. I can't stand her myself. That kind of... Those are deadly comments to children. It may as well give them arsenic or something as far as the effectiveness in a classroom is concerned. So I know by that. The notebooks, are they a blessing or a curse? That's up to parents primarily, more so than to the students. And I want to close the illustration I used last time I spoke on notebooks. And let it lie right at your hand. The story is the wise old man of the village who can answer anyone's question, could solve all mysteries, answer all questions. And he had a fine reputation for this. And there were some of the young boys in the community that just wanted to see if they couldn't trick the old man. And they tried many times and never could do it. Finally, they came upon the perfect scheme to trick the old man. He couldn't answer the question correctly. And the way they do it was they would take a small bird, place it in their hand, he'd be alive, and they'd ask the old man, "Old man, is this bird dead or alive?" And if the old man said, "Well, the bird's alive," they would simply squeeze it tight for a second, let it go, and of course it would be dead. If the old man said the bird was dead, open the hand and let the bird fly from their hand. So they hurriedly ran to the old man and had the bird in the hand and said, "Old man, tell us, is this bird dead or alive in my hand?" And the wise old man simply looked at the boys and said, "As you will, so it will be." Now, parents are not a truer expression of your student's achievement in school and success in school. As you will it, it will be. The education of your sons and daughter is not our responsibility. God gave them to you and gave them to me. And we're simply here to help you meet that responsibility. And so it behooves you and us to work together as parents and teachers in a philosophy and a method that's demanding, exacting, frustrating, a hassle, but it will produce character, and it will produce producers, students who can do something and make something. Would you pray with me? Father, I pray that you'll take the simplicity of the explanation of this method of teaching and allow it to be a blessing and a benefit to all of us as teachers and as parents. We pray, God, that we'll find that great agreement that will produce producers among our students. So, Lord, take the information. I pray that you will uplift and inspire the parents, that their sons and daughters will become truly as you want them to be, conformed to the very image of Christ. And we pray in his name, for his sake. Amen.